Support for this podcast comes from Avangrid.
This is definitely a blue-collar community, and I'm kind of a blue-collar guy.
Rick Sealscott didn't see himself as a farmer, but wasn't about to sell his grandparents' Ohio farm. An Avangrid wind farm pays millions to the community and landowners like him each year.
Farming's up and down, but the wind turbines give us steady income. We're holding on to the farm, and we're making money. And I would absolutely do it again.
Discover where energy meets humanity at avangrid.com.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, the question of collusion seemed to be at the heart of the special counsel's Russia investigation. Now, there may be evidence of it, but does it even matter? And Facebook, Twitter, and Google confront their role in Russia's interference in the election. Plus, the terror attack in Lower Manhattan. It's Wednesday, November 1st. Mike, from your perspective as someone who covers the intelligence community, what was the significance of Monday's plea deal from George Papadopoulos?
What we see here is an emerging pattern where the campaign is willing time and time again to sit down with the Russians.
Mike Schmidt covers national security.
They've been told that the Russians have some information on Hillary Clinton. The campaign is trying to establish relationships with senior officials on the other side. There's a constant willingness on the campaign to engage with the Russians.
Legal documents unsealed in federal court lay out the clearest evidence yet that President Trump's campaign was eager to work with Russia to hurt Hillary Clinton.
Guilty.
These are now facts.
In the very first case that Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller brought in his investigation of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia.
A guilty plea from former Trump campaign foreign policy advisor George Papadopoulos, unsealed. He admitted to several interactions with a Russian with significant ties to the Russian government and lying about it to the FBI.
Collusion is cooperation, and that's what he was doing with Russians. But
at the end of the day, it shows that after Papadopoulos learned that the Russians were claiming they had dirt in emails, he tried to build a better and closer relationship with them.
And that looks like evidence of collusion, which feels like a major turning point in this investigation. Or is the significance of finding collusion not what we thought it might be when the special counsel started this investigation?
Since the Russia question emerged around the time Trump was becoming president, the word collusion has been used repeatedly. At first, Republicans and the Trump folks would say, there's no evidence of collusion. And that was their argument, adamant about that.
There is no collusion between me and my campaign and the Russians.
But what happened as the months of the administration wore on is that examples came out of different types of meetings, examples of what we thought was collusion, what the general understanding of the public and in the media of collusion was. The argument shifted on the Republican end, and they would say, well, collusion's not illegal.
Remember this, collusion in and of itself, there's no crime of collusion.
At this point, it doesn't look like they did anything wrong. That meeting was simply gathering information prior to an election that could
look, it's not a crime to meet with a Russian or a Russian government official or a Russian lawyer connected to the government. It's
even
just
when they're
not
self-describing themselves.
Doesn't matter. It's not a crime
it's
to
Russia.
Meet with the remember the Democratic.
The issue is that this is really the first time as a country, legally or otherwise, that we've had to contemplate how a foreign power impacted an election and whether one of the candidates worked with them. So we're trying to apply words and laws that we don't really know how they fit and how they go together. There was collusion, and this is, collusion. This is it. This is the example. But what does that mean? Is that illegal?
Right.
Simply having Trump or his officials sit down with the Russians to learn more about who they are or what information they may have on Hillary Clinton is probably, and I say probably because we haven't tested this out in the courts because it's never really been tested, it's probably not illegal.
Mm-hmm.
They could sit down and they can learn what they can about what the Russians have, even if the Russians stole it. Collusion is only a legal term when referring to two companies that work together to fix prices. The word collusion legally has nothing to do with elections.
Right. So the two cable companies in a place saying to each other, you're going to charge 25, I'm going to charge 25, we're going to make everyone pay 25. That's
correct.
Illegal collusion.
That's collusion.
Okay.
Collusion is working in secret to do something nefarious. While that may sound bad and have political consequences, it doesn't mean that it's illegal. But there are crimes that can occur from working with a foreign power. Legally, Mueller's investigators could bring a case if they found examples of Trump officials saying, look, if you break in and take Hillary Clinton's emails, we will lift sanctions. That type of deal or agreement would be illegal.
Because it's a quid pro quo? Because it's a do this for me, I'll do this for you?
Correct. The other areas where the Trump officials could get into trouble legally would be if there's any example where the Russians gave them money to use in their campaign, an illegal campaign donation, or if they were working as agents of the Russians in the United States in the sense that they were representing Russian interests, being paid by the Russians to promote their interests in the United States and had not registered as foreign agents.
The reality is that we seem to know more about the existence of the meetings than the precise conversations that occurred during the meetings. And it's what actually happened in these meetings between the Trump team and Russian officials or Russian agents that matters. It's not that they took the meetings, even if they knew that the Russians had hacked Clinton's emails.
But that's where you've seen Mueller come in and really use his power. In the case of Papadopoulos, Mueller's investigator said to him, look, you lied to us. You didn't tell us the truth. Now cooperate with us and tell us about what was going on in these meetings.
Right.
And that has enabled them to get a better sense of what was actually going on and whether there was any illegality. What Mueller's investigators are doing is they're just trying to figure out the facts right now. They're just trying to figure out what was actually going on, what was going back and forth, what were the discussions, who was involved, who knew about it, were there any types of deals that were going on in between? And then after they get all the facts, they'll then sit down and try and figure out legally what to do. They'll have to figure out how these facts fit into the law, an area of the law which is one that we have not really spent a lot of time as a country dealing with.
It feels like a lot of what we're talking about here comes down to the difference between what is okay politically and what is okay legally.
I was talking to a lawmaker on Capitol Hill a few weeks ago who said, in January, if you had told us that by the middle of the year, we would have had emails with the president's son saying, yes, I'd like to engage with these Russian officials and get the dirt that they have on Hillary Clinton, it would be case closed. The president has shown that he can sustain disclosures about collusion politically.
Mm-hmm.
But what remains to be seen is what will the consequences of any of this collusion be on the legal side? And that will take many, many more months, if not years, to play out.
On Tuesday, President Trump addressed the indictments of his campaign staff in a series of tweets. Of Papadopoulos, he said, quote, few people knew the young, low-level volunteer named George, who has already proven to be a liar. We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by ACLU. The ACLU knows exactly what threats a second Donald Trump term presents, and they are ready with a battle-tested playbook. The ACLU took legal action against the first Trump administration 434 times, and they will do it again to protect immigrants' rights, defend reproductive freedom, safeguard free speech, and fight for all of our fundamental civil rights.
Join the ACLU today to help stop the Extreme Project 2025 agenda. Learn more at ACLU.org.
Hey, it's John Chase.
And Mari Uehara.
From Wirecutter, the product recommendation service from the New York Times. Mari, it is gift-giving time. What's an easy gift for someone like under 50 bucks?
So in our Gifts Under 50 guide, we have this super cute palm-sized Bluetooth speaker. It comes in an array of cool colors. It's waterproof. You can bring it anywhere. I want one for my garden.
I love it. Check out all of Wirecutter's gift recommendations for yourself and everyone else at nytimes.com/holiday guide.
What the networks give us, the networks taketh away. NBC News is now taking Florida out of Vice President Gore's column and putting it back in the too close to call column.
Jim, take me back to 2001. What was going on in the U.S. news media right after the election?
Well, basically, all the news networks had egg all over their faces.
Jim Rutenberg covers the media for The Times.
They stood accused of influencing the election potentially in a decisive way by making that early call before all the voting was done.
It's impossible for the country to have such a division as they do.
Doris.
Uh-oh, something's happened.
George Bush is the president-elect of the United States. He has won the state of Florida, according to our projections.
And what were the repercussions for those media companies?
Chair recognized himself and members in order.
They were called down to Capitol Hill.
Thank you all for voluntarily appearing and for participating under the rules that are set for these types of hearings.
And all of the news networks sent their very top people. They showed up. They apologized. They said we had it wrong, and they vowed to fix it. And they all said it stops with us. We're the top people. We take responsibility.
I assure this committee that CNN will go the last mile to fix the problems which have been identified. As I have told our staff, and I know that we all understand it, we would rather be right than first.
Thank you very much.
So, Jim, why are you thinking about that moment right now?
Because here we are with a much worse incident, right? Much worse. Foreign intrusion into our election. This time, that interference was abetted by not necessarily news networks, but the tech companies, Facebook, Google, and Twitter.
Thank you, Chairman Graham and Ranking Member Whitehouse. And I'd like to thank our three witnesses for joining us today. Why has it taken Facebook 11 months to come forward and help us understand the scope of this problem, see it clearly for the problem it is, and begin to work in a responsible legislative way to address it, when former President Obama cautioned your CEO that this was a big problem and Facebook needed to come forward?
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate the question.
So basically, after weeks, if not months, of cajoling from Congress, tell us what happened, show us what happened, Congress finally called the tech platforms to hearings in Washington on Capitol Hill. Tuesday was the first of three. We didn't see Mark Zuckerberg, Sheryl Sandberg, or Jack Dorsey of Twitter there. We saw their lawyers.
My name is Colin Stretch, and since July 2013, I have served as the general counsel of Facebook.
Twitter understands the importance of the committee's inquiry into extremist content.
My name is Richard Salgado. As director of law enforcement and information security at Google, I work with the thousands of people.
So the tech companies, unlike the television companies, did not send their most senior figures to go down there and explain themselves.
They didn't want to say that they played any role. Now they step forward to say,
tonight, Facebook revealing that 80,000 posts from Russian-backed Facebook accounts reached potentially a third of all Americans between 2015 and 2017. Facebook saying that approximately 126 million people may have been served one of their stories at some point during the two-year period.
There's a yawning gap between what they said in the beginning and what they are saying now.
What is Congress asking these companies? What's the big question in these hearings?
You know, there's a fascinating moment during this hearing where...
Let me ask Google this, to be fair.
Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana has to ask, what are you? What do you think you are?
Are you a media company or a neutral technology platform?
Are you a tech company or are you a media company? Are you responsible for this? Or are you just kind of a dumb platform? And then what do we do about it?
We're a technology platform primarily.
That's what I thought you'd say.
Yeah.
You don't think you're one of the largest news, the largest newspaper in 92 countries?
We're not a newspaper. We're a platform for sharing of information that can include news from sources such as newspapers.
This is the crux of the whole matter. For years, Facebook, Twitter, Google have said they're just neutral platforms. They're not content providers. Mm-hmm. They're hosting a discussion. They're letting you connect to your neighbors. They don't want to have to take the responsibility that a news company does, that we have to take, that CNN has to take, or ABC News has to take. They don't want to be responsible for the content on their platform. It opens up a whole can of worms. Mm. But it puts them in this position where they're trying to say, well, we don't know what's going on our platform. We'll do our best, but we can't control this thing. And that's not an acceptable answer. Congress is not going to accept it.
Gentlemen, I'm very proud that the three companies you're representing here today are American companies. But your power sometimes scares me.
There are a lot of senators who are bringing legislation that will make the social media companies have to adhere to similar rules as what the television stations have to follow. What's a political ad? What did it look like? Who paid for it? How much did they pay for it? What was the frequency? And if that had been in place now, the Russian ads wouldn't have been able to run because we'd know they're illegal, they're of foreign provenance, and they cannot run. That's against the law no matter what. Here's what it won't do. What it won't do, which is a much bigger problem for the platforms, it won't regulate false accounts that are freely pumping out fake or divisive stuff.
Jim, it seems like this hearing on Tuesday marks a moment where we're recognizing what this election forces us to acknowledge, which is that social media plays a significant role in our political life, at least as much as traditional media, maybe even more. But does this mark a shift in the way that these tech companies, the Twitters and the Facebooks, actually see themselves?
Absolutely. Like, without question. They're shifting before our eyes. It's slow. It's grudging. But it's inevitable. Yeah, they cannot just say that they're hosting this discussion that they have nothing to do with and take no responsibility for. And they know it.
When it comes to the 2016 election, I want to be clear. We take what happened on Facebook very seriously. The foreign interference we saw is reprehensible. That foreign actors hiding behind fake accounts abused our platform and other internet services to try to sow division and discord and to try to undermine the election is directly contrary to our values and goes against everything Facebook stands for.
Jim, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
First, I just want to say that today there was a loss of innocent life in Lower Manhattan. The dead and injured were just going about their days, heading home from work or from school or enjoying the afternoon sun on bicycles. This is a tragedy of the greatest magnitude.
Around 3 p.m. on Tuesday, as schools let out and Halloween crowds gathered, a man in a pickup truck drove down a bike path in Lower Manhattan, injuring at least 11 and killing at least 8. The driver, in a rented truck from Home Depot, drove into the bike path a few blocks from the New World Trade Center, mowing down several pedestrians and bikers before slamming into a small yellow school bus. Witnesses say they saw the driver step out of the truck, yell "God is great" in Arabic, and wave around a pellet and paintball gun before police shot him. Authorities have identified him as Saifullo Saipov, a 29-year-old who came to the U.S. from Uzbekistan 7 years ago and had a green card that allowed permanent legal residence. Investigators discovered handwritten notes near the truck that indicated an allegiance to ISIS, but have yet to uncover evidence of direct ties between Saipov and the group.
Let me be clear that based on the information we have at this moment, this was an act of terror, and a particularly cowardly act of terror aimed at innocent civilians, aimed at people going about their lives who had no idea what was about to hit them.
On Tuesday evening, Mayor Bill de Blasio spoke about the attack.
We have been tested before as a city, very near the site of today's tragedy. And New Yorkers do not give in the face of these kinds of actions. We'll respond as we always do. We will be undeterred.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.